Here we go, the John Curley, Sherry Elliger Show, starring Sherry Elliger and the teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar. And I'm going to edit everything she wrote and letter of the day. There we go. On the fly, I did that for you, Sherry, because Teeny went on. It was like two pages of her handwriting, letting the stuff about, so let's talk about her. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Come on in. Don't forget the letter of the day will be announced after we encourage you to write to us. Andrew, hopefully you're just knocking it out of the park with the Send Us Your Letter song. People really do seem to look forward to it. And I thought about this today on the plane. Should the people that only listen from 3 to 4, they never get a chance to hear the Send Us Your Letter song. It seems like a totally different show for people that listen from like 4 to 6, you know? And then it seems like a really familiar show for people that listen from 6 to 7, you know?
Are you saying maybe the letter song should be played a little bit earlier for the benefit of those who are only able to listen? Or are we then rewarding bad behavior because they're not listening the entire time?
I don't know. I can't figure that sort of stuff. We're going to have to, when we do our big retreat where we all go away for the weekend, we'll have to figure all that out.
Okay.
All right. All right. Diving into the day! Oh, yes. Here we go. Boy, I am running on 3 hours of sleep. I'm playing hurt.
Yeah. Are you in a nice place now?
Yesterday I was at a casino, the River Casino in Schenectady, New York. Boy,
you
see
the
sad people walking around, spending money in the slot machines. And oh my God, it's just so sad.
Yeah, there's not a lot that's more depressing than a casino in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, when you see
in the middle of New York, like Schenectady, New York.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just so sorry. Just there's not a lot of people, you know Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. Nobody's near the top nor striving to get there. You get the sense that they're all pretty much sort of settling in at the bottom. You know, can I eat this pizza without throwing up? Check, yes. And then they just eat the pizza. You know, and then I saw this lady. She was working behind the counter at this place called Johnny's. And every time I'd order something, there you go, hon. There you go, hon. There you go, sweetheart. There you go, hon. There you go, hon. And I said to her, you know, I was at this point of like 2 hours sleep. You know, it's really interesting. I grew up in Philadelphia, lived in New York and stuff in New Jersey. And when you say that, it just takes me back. And I live in Seattle, lived in Seattle now for a long time. And just makes me really feel like part of something, you know? And I realized halfway through my, which I have truncated for the purpose of the show, halfway through my sort of emotional, you know, connection with this woman, keep calling me hun, I saw her eyes shift to like dead fish eyes. Like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
I don't think they have the awareness that, you know, that's so normal, right? That's how they talk, how everybody talks. And when someone turns a mirror around and says, wow, you make me feel at home, you make me feel, they're like, who are you? What?
Yeah. It got awkward, got awkward really fast. I thought the security's going to come down on me, like a hurricane. Oh, speaking of hurricanes. So a hurricane's good for the economy. I had seen this kind of kicked around a number of times. So the hurricane comes through and decimates Fort Myers, Florida. The pictures of Fort Myers, Florida. I thought, well, Fort Myers had some sort of kind of crappy parts of the town. Is it actually good or bad? This goes to Milton Friedman, the idea, the story of the kid that broke the window of someone's window. And then they realize, oh, this is great. Now all of a sudden there's work for the glazier who's going to fix the window. There's work for this person and that person. And then Milton Friedman tells the story, goes, well, then you just go around and break every window. The problem is that the money that was going to be spent prior to the window being broken was the guy that owned the store that had the broken window. He was going to buy a suit, which he wanted to buy. Now the man that sells the suit doesn't sell the suit. The man that sells the tie doesn't sell the tie because the man that got the broken window has to fix the window. So you're diverting where you want the capital to go. And that's pretty much what most economists say. Temporarily, it creates jobs, but it's jobs being created for construction and people like that. But they're not building anything new. There's no forward production. It's all restructuring rebuilding, but not building new. So you're not creating sort of pods of capital, not creating wealth. You're fixing problems. But when you do fix it, things do get better a little bit for a while. Like, for instance, in New Orleans, they've actually fixed the schools up. They fixed the levees. So you do get an influx of a whole bunch of money to fix problems, but you're not spending money on new things.
Right.
That all
it's
makes
clean
sense?
Up and yeah. rebuilding. And they yeah. say that it's good, you know, it's good for the economy. It takes a hit initially, but then about 2 years later, disasters are a major stimulus.
Right. Right. Very similar to the war, right? So we were struggling in the Depression, 1936, 37. Oh, boy, look out. And then when the war, we go to war, Japan bombs Pearl Harbor, and then the whole country just goes into a giant industrial mechanism where now we're pumping out tanks and making bullets, and everybody's back working again as we're producing the war effort, and the economy is really cranking. Well, we weren't really building any wealth. We were building things to destroy wealth, to destroy the Germans and Japanese, and we were doing what we could, but we weren't creating new things, but everybody was working towards the war effort. Paul Krugman, a writer for the New York Times, big liberal, Harvard professor, he talks about maybe every couple of years when the economy is sort of sputtering and not enough people are employed, that the federal government should, and he sort of said it not, yeah, half jokingly, but he said, if the government were to tell everybody that we're about to be attacked by aliens, everyone would all of a sudden, all hands on deck, we would be doing everything we could, building shields, bullets, whatever it is, because we have to get ready for the impending alien attack, and the economy would really be going. Everybody would be working. We would all be prepared, getting ready. And he goes, and then once everything gets going and you're building and building and building, and now all this money's moving around, this is very Keynesian, all the money's moving around, then the government would go, oh, we just got word. There is no alien attack, so everybody just relax. And by that point, the government has ingested and spit out all of the money to get everybody working. This is Paul Krugman's thing that he said a couple of years ago about fake the alien attack to stimulate the economy. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Isn't it very similar to what they did with COVID? That shut everything down, close it all down, expand government's power, shut down the economy, and then spit out a whole bunch of money to everybody and then turn the economy back on again. I don't think it's as intentional as Krugman's thing about creating, you know, an alien attack. But had you ever heard anything like that before? Fake something to get something going?
Well, I mean, not specifically, but if COVID, I think COVID would be a failed example of that, right? I mean, because look at the economy now. I mean, it came back. And it was good for a while, but then it tanked again. So it's hard to know, like, what the outcome would be. With these major disasters, though, it does put people back to work. It does employ a lot of people. I mean, I don't even know what the estimates are. I think I heard something like $236 billion worth of damage in Florida. And yeah. So what that's going to take is, you know, enormous. But you're right. They're not going to rebuild, like, brand new cities or whatever. They're going to repair things. They're going to, you know, get it back to the standard that it was before, maybe a little bit better. So,
yeah. I've seen some of the pictures, and it is the power of Mother Nature. And then there's the aftermath. But then prior to, there's always some knucklehead out there surfing or something. We were going to do the story about the weatherman that saw the dog or cat left behind, a kitten. But then for your sake, Sherry, we did not do that story. So I just want to let you know.
I know you sent it to me. I couldn't read it. I couldn't watch it. It's just, it was just so hard. I don't even like to see the reporters out there being beaten up by the storm. I find that so disturbing and sad. You know, it's just, it's, I can't stand it. When that, we talked about this yesterday with my other boyfriend, and about the guy that's holding on to the lamppost while he's out there. And is there really a need anymore to send reporters out there when everybody's got a cell phone? Anybody that's in the middle of this could take footage of something. Do you have to send a reporter out there to risk their lives to do this?
Yes.
You think so? Would you have done that as a weatherman if you were in a state like Florida?
Of course. You have to go out there. because the other guy at the other station's out there. So, yeah, you go out there and you, yeah, it's kind of fun, actually, until the guy notices a bunch of stuff flying by his head.
Yeah,
and he's
exactly.
like, I better come in. Yeah, because you get hit by something. But, I mean, I've never done big, serious storms like that, you know, snowstorms and things. But, oh, my God, I would be out there in a minute. But I would hold on. You ever seen how I could do that thing where I can hold on to a pole and then stick my legs straight out?
Yeah.
I used to do that every once in a while because they would send me out to do something and I'd go, yeah, the wind's starting to pick up. It's certainly going to be a concern later on as that high pressure system moves over top. Let's take a look at the forecast. And then I'd throw to the full screen graphic, cover it, and then I would grab onto a pole and then I'd have my legs, my whole body out like I'm in the wind. And then I'd go, yeah, the winds are really picking up now. And they'd come out to me and I would be doing that. And there is a wig and toupee warning in effect. The National Weather Service issuing a wig and toupee warning. And then I had a picture of my friend Dave, who was the anchor. And then I was able to take this magic pen that I had and have his hair disappear. And he was completely bald. So that was pretty much how I did the weather. My whole weather was nothing but like, okay, let's get the weather in there. But how many jokes can I get in? But I would have definitely been out there in the wind, in the rain, and standing there, you know, cracking a few, but then also giving life-saving information.
Of course. It would have been funny if you had put on, like, a bald wig and then had a toupee over it and had yours blow off, and then you'd be bald. Yeah, that'd be funny.
Sherry, I'm telling you, we could have really done some damage there covering that stuff. I love the fact that Don Lemon had this guy on, this scientist. These scientists hate when you try to get into the world of science, when they're doing science stuff and Don Lemon trying to convince this guy that it's about climate change and stuff. You get that sound, Lemon, getting a little bit of a humble pie served to him at 50 miles an hour?
Can you tell us what this is and what effect climate change has on this phenomenon?
We can come back and talk about climate change at a later time. I want to focus on the here and now. We think the rapid intensification is probably almost done. There could be a little bit more intensification as it's still over the warm waters of the eastern Gulf of Mexico, but I don't think we're going to get any more rapid intensification. If you look here, you can actually see, pretty interesting for your viewers, you can actually see a second eye wall forming around the inner eye wall, and that's basically the second eye wall has overtaken the original eye wall, and that should arrest development.
I'm just trying to get that. You said you want to talk about climate change, but what effect does climate change have on this phenomenon that is happening now? Because it seems these storms are intensifying. That's the question here.
I don't think you can link climate change to any one event. Okay. On the whole, on the cumulative, climate change may be making storms worse, but to link it to any one event, I would caution against that.
Okay. Well, listen, I grew up there, and these storms are intensifying. Something is causing them to intensify.
It's like, yeah, this guy's a scientist nerd, right? And Don Lemon is saying, I grew up there, and I can tell you they are intensifying. He, from his own recollection of growing up there and then sitting behind the desk and then questioning a scientist, right?
Well, there's two things going on here because,
yes.
First of all, he two people combating each other with their professions. So the first thing that happened was he ignored Don Lemon's question. So he was mad about that, right? And
yes.
Then he was trying to out-science the guy, and the scientist was like, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. So he had to go back to the question. And yes, because he grew up there, that makes him a bigger scientist than the scientist
right.
himself.
Because he wants to definitely put on there. The hurricane season was extremely quiet. I don't think there was any, because it starts in August. Normally August and then September picks up. So we've really only one big one, which has been this one. And it is a big one. And the double eye and all the other stuff that went with it and how it gains more energy as it moves over warm waters. Evening Magazine, we had an opportunity to actually fly into the eye of a hurricane. I forget which one it was, where we were in it with some jet and, it was really amazing because as you go into the wall of it, I mean, the turbulence is unbelievable. And then the jet thing that we were in, this big airplane, drops, I don't know how many feet, just boom. And once you're into the middle of the hurricane, just nothing. It's just quiet, peaceful, just blue skies. You look straight down, but swirling all around the outside, obviously, where the energy of it was. It was quite remarkable. I was like, okay, oh, God, get my stomach back. And it's like, okay, now we're going to punch through the other side of the wall. Can't we just live in the inside of it? Can't we just follow it all the way to the airport and then, like, land underneath it?
was this an assignment, or were you actually on a plane and you had to
We got a chance to fly with the guys that study hurricanes and punched into the eye of the hurricane.
And you weren't afraid of that? You weren't afraid that the plane
I wasn't on that plane. It was John Stoffel. I was just the... Okay. They threw it to me. I wasn't going to mess up my hair. And plus, I didn't have a sweater that I thought would look good on the plane. I had a lot of clothes that I tried to tie in with the stories. I had nothing for Eye of a Hurricane wardrobe.
Well, that is very specific and difficult to kind of nail down. So it was good that you passed on it.
And yeah, because everybody else is in flight suits. They all have, like, super stuff on. And then you're like, you have to kind of do, like, the junior flight suit, something that zippers all the way up to the neck.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you're like, it's just not enough.
Yeah, pseudo, like, astronaut pilot look, but still ready for anything if you had to put on a parachute or something.
Then you're in, like, a members-only jacket that you had since 1981. Right. But and you're unbuttoning the epaulettes. Just in case something goes wrong.
Right.
There's a reference for everybody born before 1957. That's your members only jacket. Andrew, members only jacket, yes or no?
Absolutely.
I think only because you've mentioned it before on the show, John. I don't know.
Okay, see what's happening?
Yeah.
That's good for you, Jacob. And Andrew, when you say absolutely, you don't even know what I'm referring to, do you? Do you know what a members only jacket
is? Something about jackets? I like jackets. I'll take a jacket.
Okay. Members only?
Yes.
Okay. By the way, you have just put yourself into Send Us Your Letters song with that ridiculous response. All right, here we go. This doesn't inspire you to write to the John Curley, Sherry Elliger show. I don't know what will. Here we go. This is trying to get you to send us letters, and we feel this song stimulates the imagination. Andrew?
Mom, change the station!
Send us a letter. Send us a letter. It's that time of day when we read out your letter. There you tell us, hey, how you love us. Oh!
Sucks. Not a joke.
Ring, ring.
Not a joke.
Write it in a letter and be the letter of the day.
Harry, you want an Arnold Palmer?
She was offering you an Arnold Palmer.
For rats.
Oh, yeah, right. No, I mean, I'm still going to steal them.
But we just try singing the song.
Every time I see your face, it reminds me of you.
Send us a letter.
Hey, check out the
meat block.
Yay!
Nasty.
Excellent.
Wow. Thank you, Andrew.
My pleasure.
Again, one of these days, got to try it. Just maybe do 3 hours of that song. See what management says.
A complete collage of all the drops we have for the past forever.
We could do it. We could do it. With the remaining time, this woman sends something out on TikTok because you're not really existing unless you send something out on TikTok. She's 46 years old, and she cries because she feels she is too old to find a man. And then the internet reacts, and then there's a dash, and that dash was the point where I didn't click on it not to watch it because I wanted to have a fresh take on the air. Wow. Did you watch it, Sherry?
Yeah, and I was shocked that you were interested in this. Like, I got it, and I kept waiting for the punchline. Like, okay, what else is there?
Well, this sucks, because, listen, here's the thing. I saw the headline. I sent it to Jacob. I'm on the plane. I can't watch it. It's up. I'm depending on you guys to go.
No, I watched it. I watched every bit of it. It's sad. It's depressing. I mean, you feel bad for this woman. But I'm not exactly sure why you liked it. Like, I mean,
I didn't. I just liked the headline. I thought, well, this is something. I'll throw this into the pot, expecting you guys to go, yeah, we watch it. It doesn't work. I'm just desperately bailing things out of the sinking ship of the show every single day. And every once in a while, as you dig down into the bottom of the boat and there's a fish in the water, you then like throw the fish over too. Like, oh, I forgot we need the fish.
Well, let's listen
follow
to the
me
fish,
in this analogy
and then,
here?
Yeah, and then you can judge for yourself what you think of this
okay,
here poor
is,
lady.
Here she is. Okay. She's okay.
You know, it's crazy because I joke a lot about being single, and I laugh it off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm 46 years old.
Okay.
And while I'm getting ready for surgery and everything.
Yeah.
It dawned on me that I'm 46 years old. And I don't have a husband to take care of me. I don't have a husband to help me get ready.
Yeah.
I'm 46 years old and...
How old are you again?
I still need my mama.
Hold your mama
to take
point.
Care of me. Post-op. I still need my sister, which, whether I had a husband or not, they would be there.
Yeah.
It sucks. Mm. Being single and 46.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Oof. 46.
There's another minute if we want to hear it, but I think she mostly just talks about how
she's going
46.
In for operation to get her accent removed. I think she's 46.
She might have mentioned 46.
How did the internet react to this sad lady who doesn't have a husband? It's like, oh, my brother-in-law. What'd they do? How'd they help her?
Well, I think they reacted. They felt bad for her. They felt like, you know, that they understood. Yeah, I mean, it says, I don't think that this vulnerable moment should have been shared with the world or that she should want it shared when she's feeling better, things like that, you know.
I will say in the last minute, she does discuss the men that she's dated and she kind of complains about the quality of the men. And so I think that becomes part of the maybe reaction from the rest of the internet was about whether or not she had maybe screwed it up with men that were okay or had chosen bad men. So that was the other factor, I guess.
Yeah. Don't you think most guys, scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like a prince, don't you think most guys hover around 4, anywhere between 4 and 3 and 3.7? And nobody busts above the 5. I was thinking about that today on the plane, looking at all these guys, and I'm just like, yeah, slim pickings.
Yeah, I guess it depends. It depends on what you're looking for. Are you talking slim pickings looks wise or slim pickings like which wise?
You watch the men walk by you on the plane because you're always in the front row, John, and you're just categorizing how attractive they are.
Attractive and overweight. And then I watched 11 minutes because I didn't want to pay for it. The guy next to me had the monitor on the wall there in first class because I sit up in 1A. And he was watching the Guy Fieri guy. Yeah. With that show, I didn't have the headset. So I'm just watching large men with goatees and baseball hats and huge stomachs eating fried food for 14 minutes with no sound, and it was utterly disgusting. And it's the weirdest thing is that you could watch it with sound on and be like, oh, okay, well, it's going to be hot sauce. That's going to be really hot. I wonder how he handles it. But without any sound, it's just a lot of guys tilting their head to one side like a shark and then eating food and then cutting away to guy with his weird frosted tips and then back to some other fat guy licking his fingers. I'm like,
frosted tips. I haven't heard that in 20 years.
Does he have frosted tips?
Yes, he does. Yeah, that is, I've seen a little bit of that show, and it is just like, just call it, you know, here's my heart attack. I mean, it's just.
Imagine the editor going, okay, give me a cutaway of the guy with the fat guy with the baseball hat. No, not that guy, the other guy, the one that says, is it hot enough for you? Okay, shot of him. Okay, now to the plate of wings. Okay, now back up the guy in his frosted tips. And now swing the camera over to the outside of the place. We get the sign, the neon sign. And I couldn't stop watching it.
Don't forget the shot of them like sucking on their fingers and licking their fingers after it's done.
If the wing right outside the window breaks off and we hurtle to the ground, I'd be like, well, at least I don't have to stare at that screen anymore.
At least that's over for me. I'm okay. I've had a good life. I'm done.
It's unfortunate. And all those guys in the scenes will all be in heaven because they all just ate themselves to death. We'll see how we did that letter song, Andrew. You should be proud of yourself. Look at it. Look at all the letters that came pouring in. See, because the mailman is all bent over as he comes in here. Lift with your knees, mailman. Here he comes now, Sherry. Yell something out encouraging to the mailman, Sherry.
I'm I'm the mailman.
No. You're doing a great job.
I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman.
Don't mess with me.
If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. Bring the mail to your door.
Right to your door. Teeny, thank you. Thank you. It is a thankless job, and you do it every single day, choosing the letter of the day. You're the best, Teeny, the best.
The answer is yes.
Yes, you are. Mm. All right. We'll get the letter of the day first. Take care of all the rest. Here we go. Sherry.
John returns. Heidi and Redondo says, hey, Sherry, be nice to John today. He flew all the way home from Albany last night, and his arms must sure be tired.
Oh, I'm wiped out. Now, long-distance phone calls. 360. Sherry had an Aunt Karen. Well, that explains a lot.
Mm. 206 says, I can remember when my mom's hometown still had an operator. On holidays, mom would call the operator so she could find where grandpa was. The operator would call around to the relatives and find out where he was, and then we would call him there.
Simpler days. Not really. 253, you damaged those kids psychologically talking about Halloween. And Goodfellas in the 206 says, good for you, John, and your kale pops and carrot tricks. And it doesn't help them. It does help them make better choices. Tom Brady always made a very healthy candy for his kids for Halloween. There. Because they're like Tom Brady's kids.
Yeah, 360 says, maybe the fetuses don't like kale or carrots, but had gas. Science.
Science. 360 saying, these stories will be great for John's grandkids. Oh, okay.
Porch Pirates 360 says, is the time and effort of those Porch Pirates being covered by the value of the packages?
Have to think about that one. Tour of the Home Inspector, I'm impressed the homeowners only resorted to pranks. Consider the large amount of boom stick ownership in the great state of Texas. Yeah, and shoot somebody.
360 says, if people would get off their lazy butts and actually go to an actual store to buy things instead of ordering everything online, they wouldn't have to worry about porch pirates.
Yeah, that'll get them. And then Kyle in Olympia says, get off the lazy butts. Kyle in Olympia says, maybe this lady is just a big jerk. When I was in high school, myself and my friends would steal our school's principal garbage cans on garbage day. Every week, he had to buy a new can. 25 years later, I would do it again all over just with for a smile. Wait, he would steal the garbage cans every week?
And what are you doing with all of those garbage cans?
You just stack one inside another.
Okay.
Wow.
Wouldn't they put a camera or something out there? I mean,
they didn't have cameras back then. 25 years ago, Sherry.
Okay.
That's 25 years ago, a long time ago. Didn't have cameras. That's what Tom remembers.
Talking Dogs 253 says, the problem with those buttons is that you're teaching your dog that it decides what to do, so it's the alpha.
Oh, look out. It's going to eat your nose. Julie B. in the 206 says, I watch Bunny the dog. She knows lots of buttons.
That's another TikTok dog that also uses buttons to communicate.
Okay, now we're doing references on TikTok that I'm supposed to know?
You know,
that's what
Tom doesn't
remember.
Area code 367.
I am so punchy. I'm right on the edge. Right on the edge.
It's not a coincidence that dog is God spelled backwards.
Yeah.
And now
mercifully.
It is time for the letter of the day.
Letter of the day, as chosen by the teeny tiny lady in that pickle jar.
With the mustache. Area code 253 says, welcome back, John. I love listening to you and Shirley. You are both very fun to listen to. Love your show when you're doing the show with Shirley.
Me too. Shirley will be back on Monday, by the way.
I hope Shirley had a good vacation.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Didn't write no more.
Sherry, would you mind doing another hour?
She left the glow.
I'm
sure if
Shirley's around. Yeah. Maybe she can do it.